This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Podcast 69 South, where we cuss and discuss true crime, cold cases, current events, and hot topics, along with our state of society today. This is your trigger warning. Our podcast content is produced for adult listeners 18 years of age and older. We discuss situations that may be offensive and triggering to some listeners. Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
New developments in Karen Reed's civil case. She's suing several witnesses in her murder trials.
Her lawsuit alleges others were responsible for the 2022 death of her Boston police officer boyfriend, John O'Keefe, and that investigators failed to pursue those leads. The suit names Brian and Nicole Albert, Jennifer and Matt McCabe, and Brian Higgins as defendants. It also names as defendants former State Trooper Michael Proctor, State Police Sergeant Yuri Buchanek, and State Police Lieutenant Detective Brian Tully, all in their personal capacities. She also signaled she plans to sue Canton Police and State Police.
In a statement, Reed's defense team says, quote, our complaint lays out in stark detail the malicious prosecution, the conspiracy, the civil rights violations, and the intentional misconduct that these defendants visited upon an innocent woman.
Welcome back, everybody, to 69 South. I hope you guys had a super, super good Thanksgiving, and we're coming at you on Black Friday. I'm Chop, your host, and right next to me, my co-pilot, Julie, is right here.
I'm here.
First of all, we'd like to give a shout-out to our new Patreon members. We got Aunt Mandy, and we got Stephen Hubbard, and he wanted us to reiterate to you guys that the fucking struggle is real. And he's going through it right now. So shout out to you, Lil Hub. So as you could probably tell from the beginning of our intro, we're going to talk about the Karen Reed civil case, which we've always been infatuated with this case. So,
and we're gonna... she's coming for every single one of them who she says framed her, as she should.
As she should. And I'm glad she is, because that whole thing was a farce.
Absolutely. And I want to jump into this 47-page complaint, because I think this is what everybody's really been waiting on. They want to see this go to trial.
Before we get right into it, though, we have been doing a daily show called The Daily Detour, and it's available on Patreon. And if you would like to help us keep the heat and the lights on in the studio and enjoy these new episodes, these daily episodes, go to
www.patreon.com/69South.
We're going to release a couple of them so you guys can get a free taste of it, but let's get on with it.
So I'm going to jump in with the introduction right here of Karen Reed's complaint. She's the plaintiff. She's suing disgraced Massachusetts State Police Trooper Michael Proctor, his sergeant Yuri Buchanek, Lieutenant Brian Tully, and of course the culprits in this frame job, Brian Albert, Nicole Albert, Jennifer McCabe, Matthew McCabe, and Brian Higgins. And here we go. So, for 3.5 years, plaintiff Karen Reed was wrongly accused of a homicide and subjected to suspicion, arrest, 2 prosecutions, and public condemnation, all resulting from the gross misconduct of the Massachusetts State Police and those working in tandem with the Massachusetts State Police to shield from liability the party or parties responsible for the death of Boston police officer John O'Keefe III. Now, after being acquitted of all charges relating to Mr. O'Keefe's death, Ms. Reed brings this action to recover for and address the actions of those actually involved in Mr. O'Keefe's death and the law enforcement officers who failed to ensure that justice was sought and served in the aftermath of January 29th, 2022.
See, Karen Reed did not kill her then boyfriend, Mr. O'Keefe. Rather, in the early morning hours of January 29th, Mr. O'Keefe was killed in the defendants Brian and Nicole Albert's home on 34 Fairview Road in Canton in an altercation during a late-night house party with other defendants, collectively called the quote-unquote house defendants, after a night of heavy drinking. The house defendants responsible for Mr. O'Keefe's death, some of whom had professional experience with police investigations, concocted a plan immediately after the altercation to avoid culpability and to frame Karen Reed. Rather than call first responders for help, among other actions, the house defendants conducted a Google search for information about house long to die in cold.
That was Jen McCabe at 227.
Yeah, and she must have been fucking freezing to death because instead of H-O-W, she put H-O-S, and that's been a meme and a fucking joke to everybody. House long to die in cold. Moved Mr. O'Keefe's body outside and placed him on the Albert's front lawn near the road to make it look like Mr. O'Keefe was hit by a vehicle and that he died in the snow without ever coming into the house that night. Mr. O'Keefe's body remained on the Albert's lawn until Karen Reed found him later that morning.
And I want to say this real quick. We did a series on this called Secrets in the Snow. If you haven't heard it, go back
and check it out.
A bunch of our episodes. It's like in the early episodes of ours that we did this. You have to go listen to it before you listen to this so you can understand everything that's going on. So,
and we're not saying what we're reading here is facts. We are literally just reading from the lawsuit. So all this is alleged and
what she's claiming.
Yes, absolutely.
So from the beginning, investigators from the Massachusetts State Police allowed the house defendants to direct the investigation away from themselves and towards Ms. Reed. The house defendants were a well-connected and close social group with a strong ties to law enforcement. The Alberts are a prominent family in Canton, and the investigating police officers knew them well. The lead investigator for MSP, Michael Proctor, grew up in Canton and resides there to this day. He has been and remains close personal friends with the Albert family. House defendant Brian Albert was a longtime Boston police officer, and House defendant Brian Higgins was an agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives.
Now, adhering to the unwritten rule of protecting their own, Proctor and his MSP colleagues intentionally disregarded the obvious and compelling evidence tying the House defendants to Mr. O'Keefe's murder. Specifically, Mr. O'Keefe's injury were consistent with a physical altercation. He had bruises and lacerations on his face and a deep gash in the back of his head, suggesting that he was punched and fell backwards, hitting his head on a rigid surface. He also had a dog bite wounds and scratches on his right arm and forearm. Equally evident, Mr. O'Keefe did not have a single injury consistent with being struck by a vehicle. He did not have any broken bones, or even a bruise on his legs, feet, arms, shoulders, torso, back, ribs, or anywhere below his neck that a medical examiner would otherwise expect to find on a person struck and killed by an impact from a 3-ton vehicle. And to erase any doubt, the Commonwealth's own medical examiner, the pathologist who conducted the autopsy for the Commonwealth, concluded that Mr. O'Keefe's body showed no signs of a vehicular strike. I have to agree with that because me and you have studied this case extensively.
For like 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, she would have literally had, it just didn't fucking happen the way the Commonwealth and the MSP and the fucking Albert said it did, because dude got his ass whooped and fucking beat to death. I mean, it would have had to take surgical
precision,
and he would have had to have been run over 2 or 3 times. None of it makes fucking any sense at all in my mind.
Now, despite that, Proctor and others shielded the House defendants by intentionally sidestepping fundamental investigation procedures. Propelled by the House defendants' false statements, including that Mr. O'Keefe never went into the House, Proctor reported in text messages just hours into the investigation that the House defendants weren't going to get any shit for this because he's, meaning Brian Albert, is a Boston cop, and that Proctor was determined to make the investigation cut and dry by bringing charges against the girl. Indeed, Proctor made his intentions clear in writing. Karen Reed had zero chance of skating. She's fucked.
These are quotes from his text messages, actual quotes, by the way.
This pronouncement was a mere 16 hours after Mr. O'Keefe's body was discovered on the lawn of Brian and Nicole Albert, and Proctor had not even walked into their home.
Take a second for that to sink in. He's a state police detective investigator.
Friends
with the cops, and 16 hours without even going into the house where the crime scene was located, literally said he's going to bring charges against a girl and she's fucked. Zero chance of her skating. I mean, this dude's either fucking psychic or it's the blue wall that they talk about. Now, true to his promise, Proctor and his colleagues did not search the house for blood evidence resulting from the gash to the back of Mr. O'Keefe's head, or for fingerprints, or for DNA evidence. Proctor did not search the house despite the fact that Mr. O'Keefe was discovered without a winter coat, without the hat that several witnesses said that he had been wearing on that night, and without his left shoe. At Proctor's direction, the house was never processed by a criminalist or even photographed. No member of the MSP, including Proctor, set foot inside 34 Fairview for nearly a week. The police did not examine or take evidence from the Alberts, German Shepherd, that was in the house on January 29th. That's a dog that had a long history of attacking other dogs and people.
Neither Proctor nor any of the MSP troopers conducted physical examinations of the house defendants for evidence of involvement in the altercation, such as marks on their hands, knuckles, or face, or bruises on their bodies. They did not seize or search the house defendants' phones. They conducted only perfunctory, unrecorded conversation with Proctor's friends and acquaintances without any attempt to corroborate their stories. They permitted would-be witnesses to communicate with each other and coordinate their stories before any formal interviews. They allowed critical evidence to be manipulated in some instances and outright destroyed in others. In short, by focusing the investigation solely on Ms. Reed, as implicitly directed by the House defendants through the misrepresentations they made to police, Proctor and his colleagues disregarded and failed to obtain pertinent interviews and other critical evidence from the House defendants that cannot now be recovered or recreated.
And I'm sorry, man. I'm just saying. Now, if
it wasn't a cop,
if they would have pulled up to my house in the early morning and found a dude, the back of his head gashed open, looked like he'd went two or three rounds with Mike Tyson, his eyes fucking swelled up.
They'd have put you in handcuffs.
Fuck, yeah, they'd have put me in handcuffs. Search warrants would have been served on the house. They would have dumped my dresser drawers out. It would have been a fucking mess. No way. I mean, it's just, it's almost
comical.
It's almost comical. It is. It's fucking disgusting, really, what they've put this woman through. Detective Proctor also secretly communicated with the Alberts on his personal phone, deliberately back-channeling those communications to circumvent his state-issued device and used his sister as a conduit. For instance, on multiple occasions, Proctor disclosed critical and confidential information about the investigation to his sister, who then passed on the information to her close friend, guest Julie Albert, Brian Albert's sister-in-law. Julie Albert then passed the same information on to the rest of her family and the house defendants. Part of these communications included Julie Albert's promise to buy Proctor a quote-unquote thank you gift for handling this investigation in a manner that intentionally avoided implication of the house defendants and singularly focused on Miss Reed.
Proctor then went so far as to manufacture evidence to ensure that Miss Reed, not his friends and fellow law enforcement officers, was blamed for Mr. O'Keefe's death. This included planting evidence at the scene on Mr. O'Keefe's clothes and on Miss Reed's vehicle to support the false narrative that Miss Reed hit Mr. O'Keefe with her car, even though he knew Mr. O'Keefe's injuries were inconsistent with a motor vehicle strike and consistent with a physical altercation and dog attack.
We'll be right back.
What's up, everybody? It's Chop from 69 South. And if you can't get enough of our content and Chop and Julie's bullshit, go to Patreon at
www.patreon.com/69South.
And get your daily dose of the Daily Detour. We go through today's crazy news stories and put a little comedy spin on it for a lighter note. It comes out every day, so get your daily dose of the detour. And let us take the blues out of your day and put a little sunshine in your life. Far from conducting an objective investigation with integrity, Proctor personally sexualized and dehumanized Miss Reed throughout his investigation. Specifically, Proctor's private communication to his high school buddies, sister, and Massachusetts State Police colleagues that he believed would never be discovered exposed the corruption and bias at the core of MSP's entire investigation. Specifically, only hours into the investigation, in a text chain with eight of his high school buddies, Proctor stated that Miss Reed is a, and I quote, whack job cunt, retarded, a nutbag, and a babe with no ass. Proctor further ridiculed and derided Miss Reed for her serious medical condition, stating that, quote, her balloon knot leaked poo. In other private messages to his MSP supervisors and colleagues, Proctor bragged that while conducting a search of Miss Reed's phone, he was looking for naked pictures of Miss Reed. Disappointed, he reported that there were, quote, no nudes so far. In an unfiltered utterance, Proctor revealed to his mindset, hopefully she kills herself.
Wow.
What a motherfucker, man.
Can you imagine how humiliated and embarrassed his wife is, knowing that he's supposed to be this detective with all this integrity and looking through her phone and he's really looking for nudes and thinking that she's hot even if her asshole leaks?
And it's a flat ass.
I'd punch you right in your mouth if you ever did some shit like that to me.
I wouldn't do no shit like that for one. But, and then to say hopefully she kills herself, I bet he about fucking shit.
When they got these messages.
Oh, man. You could just see the look on his face because we watched this trial. You could just see the look on his oh, fuck look on his face. Like he wanted to fucking puke.
And in the trial, they made him repeat himself.
Absolutely, man.
So, indeed, Proctor's supervisors and the Massachusetts State Police knew about the condoned Proctor's unlawful conduct, and in some instances expressly encouraged this flagrant abuse of power. For example, on one occasion, Proctor's immediate supervisor, Yuri Bukinik, responded with a thumbs up emoji to a text calling Miss Reed retarded. Proctor's supervisors and the MSP knew Proctor had a close relationship with the Alberts and that he made no secret of his bias against Miss Reed, demonstrating a clear prejudice against her from the outset.
relying on manufactured evidence, actively ignoring exculpatory evidence, and without investigation, obvious signs pointing to the House defendants, the Commonwealth secured two separate arrest warrants for Ms. Reed and a knowingly biased indictment against her, and then wrongfully prosecuted her for murder, not once, but twice. As alleged below, these unlawful acts not only underlie plaintiff's meritless wrongful death claim against Ms. Reed, but they also form the foundation for Ms. Reed's claims against the House defendants. These acts violated Mrs. Reed's state and federal constitutional rights, the Massachusetts Civil Rights Act, and well-established Massachusetts tort for principles.
On June 18, 2025, after a two-month trial, a jury rejected the Commonwealth's theory, in part because of the overwhelming physical, scientific, and medical evidence established that Ms. Reed's vehicle did not strike Mr. O'Keefe and that Mr. O'Keefe's injuries did not come from a vehicle strike. Although Ms. Reed was ultimately and finally acquitted of all charges related to the death of Mr. O'Keefe, Proctor was fired, and nearly every MSP officer in Proctor's chain of command was disciplined for their egregious abuses and misdeeds. The Commonwealth still has not sought or provided justice, not to the O'Keefe family, not to the community at large, and certainly not to Ms. Reed.
In response, the Commonwealth has offered only empty platitudes instead of solutions. The head of MSP, Colonel Jeffrey Noble, stated, "The events of the last 3 years have challenged our department to thoroughly review our actions and take concrete steps to deliver advanced investigative training, ensure appropriate oversight, and enhance accountability. Under my direction as Colonel, the State Police has and will continue to improve in these regards." In an interview with the Boston Herald, Noble acknowledged the systematic nature of MSP's conduct in Ms. Reed's case, quote, "I'm eyes wide open to a culture issue that I have concerns with as it relates to Trooper Proctor. These hollow words do nothing to right the devastating wrongs that have been visited on Ms. Reed." Colonel Noble's words confess a sickness deep in the marrow of MSP, but offer no remedy, no medicine, no relief to someone so brutally victimized by it.
On Wednesday, March 19, 2025, following the public disclosure of Proctor's illegal and unethical conduct related to the Reed investigation, the MSP's trial board found Michael Proctor guilty of a Class A violation, which included that he was biased in his dealings with a homicide suspect and or brought otherwise himself and the Massachusetts State Police into disrepute.
Ms. Reed's life was not merely turned upside down by the MSP and the House defendants' misconduct. It was forever changed by the defendants' transgressions and wrongdoing. The years of uncertainty and unimaginable emotional distress have left lasting scars that will never be healed. At the same time, neither Mr. O'Keefe nor his family have received justice. His killer or killers still walk free. By asserting her claims against MSP, Proctor, his supervisors, and the town of Canton and the House defendants, Ms. Reed seeks, at the minimum, to confront and redress these wrongs and others. More importantly, she seeks to force the Commonwealth to fulfill its duty to stop law enforcement from trampling the innocent to protect their own.
The next part of the lawsuit is Section 2, and it talks about the parties. It talks about plaintiff Karen Reed resides in North Dighton, Massachusetts. Then it goes down to list Michael Proctor, the former MSP trooper. He resides in Canton, Massachusetts, and he's being sued in his personal capacity. Then it goes to Defendant Sergeant Yuri Bukinik, also an MSP trooper. He resides in Staunton, Massachusetts, being sued in his personal capacity. Then we go to Defendant Lieutenant Brian Tully, an MSP trooper. He lives in Hingham, Massachusetts, being sued in his personal capacity. And then we have defendants Brian and Nicole Albert out of Norwood, Massachusetts. Jennifer and Matthew McCabe, they reside in Canton, Massachusetts. And defendant Brian Higgins, and he lives in Sandwich, Massachusetts.
We'll be right back.
Discover Rosie Posey's farm stand at 6082 East Hadley Road in Mooresville, Indiana. Home of the sourdough bagel bombs. Crafted with love, these bagel bombs burst with flavors like Asiago cheese, jalapeno pepper, blueberries and cream, and everything bagel. Their artisan sourdough loaves come in classic, chocolate chip, jalapeno cheddar, and garlic parmesan, just to name a few, and they are pure perfection and the best in the area. If you're craving some sweets, they have homemade cookie sandwiches and cookie dough and s'mores flavors delight. Grab a farm fresh flower bouquet from the iconic pink roadside stand and go follow Rosie Posey's farm stand on Facebook for daily menu items and availability. Visit Rosie Posey's for an unforgettable taste experience at 6082 East Hadley Road.
Ms. Reed filed this court case in Bristol, Massachusetts, where she resides, and the court has determined that they do have jurisdiction over all claims in this case pursuant to GL 12. Blah, 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 and with regards to the federal claims pursuant to Resnesnick versus the chief of police, 374 Mass 475, blah, blah, blah.
And then we move on to part four of this complaint, which is facts common to all accounts. And this is where we get into talking about Mr. O'Keefe's death. Before his death, Mr. O'Keefe and Ms. Reed were dating. On the evening of January 28, 2022, Mr. O'Keefe and Ms. Reed went out for the night. They first went to C.F. McCarthy's in Canton, Massachusetts, where they had several drinks. Then they went to the Waterfall Bar and Grill in Canton. There, they met with a group of acquaintances, including Brian Albert, his wife Nicole Albert, Brian's brother, Chris Albert, and his wife Julie. They then met with Jennifer McCabe, Nicole's sister, and Brian's sister-in-law, her husband Matthew McCabe, and Brian Higgins. The group of acquaintances had several drinks and planned to continue the party back at the Alberts' home in Canton at 34 Fairview Road. The house defendant, Jennifer McCabe, told John O'Keefe that he should come to the house.
The group had overlapping social relationships. At the time, Brian Albert was a Boston police officer, as was Mr. O'Keefe, though they did not know each other well from being police officers. Brian Albert and Brian Higgins, now they were close friends. Higgins was an officer with the ATF. He also was permitted to keep an office at the Canton Police Department alongside Brian Albert's brother, Canton Police Detective Kevin Albert. Kevin Albert had a professional and social relationship with Michael Proctor. They were all buddies, basically.
Absolutely.
And a lot of them had grew up together.
Brian and Nicole Albert's son, Brian Albert Jr., and his friends were already at the house for Brian Jr.'s birthday. In addition, Colin Albert, Brian Albert's nephew, was present. Ms. Reed and Mr. O'Keefe had never been to the house before January 29, 2022. They arrived in front of the Alberts' home around 12:20 a.m. Ms. Reed was reluctant to attend the party for several reasons, including that she was unsure whether they were at the correct location and whether they were even welcome to the late-night party. Mr. O'Keefe got out of Ms. Reed's SUV and indicated that he would check out the party and report back to her. Mr. O'Keefe walked toward the front door / garage door area of the house and entered one of the two doors. A period of time passed without any word from Mr. O'Keefe. Ms. Reed, who was still hesitant to join, presumed that Mr. O'Keefe intended to stay and therefore she left to go to his house without him.
Now, at some point, After entering the house/garage, Mr. O'Keefe was involved in a physical altercation either inside the house or garage. During that altercation, the Albert's German Shepherd attacked him, and Mr. O'Keefe sustained multiple dog bites and scratches on his right arm. He also suffered an incapacitating gash wound on the back of his head. Mr. O'Keefe's head wound was caused by falling backward and striking a rigid surface. The Albert's garage contains such surfaces. By contrast, the head wound could not have been caused by a vehicle strike or falling backwards onto a flat, cold lawn like the Albert's.
Because of their knowledge of criminal investigations, the Albert's, the McCabe's, and Higgins knew that calling for medical care to help save Mr. O'Keefe's life would trigger immediate and irreversible risk of their own criminal exposure. Therefore, at least the five of them agreed on a simple plan to exonerate themselves and implicate Miss Reed. They would tell anyone who inquired Mr. O'Keefe never entered the house and hide evidence that he was there, including his body.
This literally sounds like pretty much what fucking happened in my mind.
It makes more sense than the Commonwealth theory.
Absolutely,
of what they
it
had.
Does. And you know they were scrambling around trying to figure out what the fuck. I mean, if he had gotten a fight with the son or Higgy Bear or, you know, the Alberts or whatever, they probably could have saved his life, really. But they were so worried about saving their own ass, I believe. That's just my opinion, folks. So, you know.
I do have an opinion. I don't think, you know, they actually intended to frame Karen, but I think when she called that morning and went over looking for him,
it was convenient.
And she asked, oh my God, could I have hit him or did I hit him? That was a trigger for Jen McCabe to manipulate that situation into, oh, this is our bitch. This is who we're blaming.
Right.
Apparently, they were going to blame it on the snowplow
That's
driver
what I was getting
and
ready
try to,
say.
To throw his body out there. But
absolutely.
Lucky That's, was a little too smart for them.
That's what I think their original fucking game plan was to do, was to put him out there right next to the snowplow marks and... Oh, he had a fucking buzz. He must have got hit by the snowplow because a snowplow would definitely fuck you up a lot worse than whatever the fuck she was driving.
Absolutely.
That shit didn't happen like that.
So back to the complaint. Sometime during the night, the house defendants repositioned a Ford Edge vehicle at a spot adjacent to the front lawn, which the Ford Edge vehicle was the, I believe, company vehicle or state police vehicle of Brian Alberts. That's what type of vehicle he drove for his work.
I think they all drove that type of vehicle.
Type of
yeah.
Ford. Mm-hmm. So once they got the Ford Edge vehicle to a spot adjacent to the front lawn, which obscured the view of that area of the lawn for potential passerbys. At some point further in the night, they carried or dragged Mr. O'Keefe's body to the same area in the yard, close to where one or more of them later claimed Miss Reed dropped off Mr. O'Keefe earlier that night. The plan was devised to make it appear that Mr. O'Keefe had been struck by Miss Reed's vehicle and then died as a result of exposure to the cold.
Mr. O'Keefe was either dead when the house defendants left him on the Albert's lawn or he died shortly thereafter. After the physicians or the physical altercation, Higgins left the house and drove to the Canton Police Department in the middle of the night.
Drunk.
Yeah, he was fucked up. He later told investigators that he had to do some, quote, administrative work, but then changed his story, subsequently stating that he drove to the station because he had to move cars in the parking lot due to the snowstorm. However, video from inside the station shows Higgins walking down the hallway and surreptitiously entering offices while wearing a hoodie to obscure his face. Surveillance video outside reveals Higgins transporting a large bag from one vehicle to another before driving away. That's suspicious.
After leaving the police station, Higgins and Brian Albert continued to coordinate their stories by calling each other multiple times in the early morning hours and ultimately spoke with each other on their cell phones at 2:22 a.m. Later, both Brian Albert and Higgins denied the existence of these phone calls, and then when confronted with their existence by a separate law enforcement agent at a separate proceeding, they coordinated the same exact lie, falsely claiming the multiple calls and answers were just, quote-unquote, butt dials. However, five minutes after the Higgins-Albert call, Ms. McKay performed a Google search on her phone at 2:27 a.m., Hoss Long to die in cold, misspelling the first word.
That just tickles me every time you say Hoss Long. And folks, man, everybody's got iPhones. They had iPhones at the time. I think butt dials, they're a thing of the past.
Not really, because I do it a lot. If I'm not paying attention, I just stick my phone in my back pocket like I accidentally FaceTime somebody or call.
But your
somebody.
Phone has to already be open.
And then locked, yeah.
Right. These guys are saying they were asleep and
bullshit.
Their fucking phone was on their bedside table and, you know.
Didn't the Albert say they were getting freaky?
They were
with
fucking.
It?
Yeah, they said they was fucking. So that could have been a dick dial or a butt dial.
Oh, my God.
I'm just saying, though, you have to look at it or put, like, a six-digit code in. Just, I mean, butt dials of this nature just didn't fucking happen. Now, this part of the lawsuit is about Ms. Reed searching for Mr. O'Keefe. Ms. Reed began the search for Mr. O'Keefe on January 29th, just before 5 a.m., when she awoke and realized that he had not returned home. She phoned the house defendant, Jennifer McCabe, who already knew exactly what had happened to Mr. O'Keefe. Ms. McCabe insisted that Ms. Reed drive to McCabe's house rather than driving to 34 Fairview Road, which Reed did. The two of them were joined by Carrie Roberts, and the three of them left the McCabe residence. However, rather than go to 34 Fairview, oddly, Ms. McCabe directed them to go back to Mr. O'Keefe's home, where Ms. Reed had just come from. After the three of them finally drove to 34 Fairview, the illogical McCabe-directed route to 34 Fairview was intentional. It allowed the house defendants more time to finish creating the scene and hiding evidence before Mr. O'Keefe's body was discovered on the Albert's lawn and first responders arrived.
As they approached the house with Miss Roberts driving, Miss Reed saw Mr. O'Keefe almost immediately. She screamed for Miss Roberts to stop the vehicle and jump from the moving car to run to Mr. O'Keefe. She began rendering aid, including CPR. As the house defendants had planned, Mr. O'Keefe's body was, quote-unquote, discovered in the front of the Albert's house near a flagpole and fire hydrant on the left side of the Albert's property as seen from the roadside. The Ford Edge, which had been parked in a position to obscure Mr. O'Keefe's body in the middle of the night, had been moved.
While Ms. Roberts joined Ms. Reed with administering CPR, Ms. McCabe did not help or even approach Mr. O'Keefe. Rather, she sat in the cab of the vehicle, called 911, and reported that there's a man passed out in the snow. Despite knowing that her brother-in-law, Brian Albert, a police officer and first responder, was just feet away inside the house. Ms. McCabe never went into the house or requested that Albert come down to help Mr. O'Keefe. Rather, as Mr. O'Keefe lay dying in the snow, Ms. McCabe stood and watched with no fear, urgency, or even concern for her family members residing mere feet away. That always got me, man.
Mm-hmm.
Your friend is dying in the snow. You have police officers, first responders, people that save people's lives
inside
every fucking
house.
Day. We're within shouting distance from you, and you don't even, I mean, that's just one of them aha fucking moments to me. Like, I mean, come on. If it was a real emergency, your buddy's out there, you don't know what the fuck happened to him. I mean, quote unquote, you don't fucking know. But if you did know and you were protecting somebody, you wouldn't have said a fucking word to them up there in the house.
Another thing that I thought was odd is that when she calls 911, she said, now this is supposed to be her friend for years. She said, there's a man passed out in the snow. A man. If that was my friend of years, I would have been like, okay, for our neighbor existence, I'd be like, man, our neighbor Matt's passed out in the snow. I don't know what happened to him. I would have been like, this man. It's like she's trying to disconnect or absolutely distance herself from the victim.
Or not even John O'Keefe, my friend, a fucking Boston police officer, an officer's down, you know?
Right.
That heightens up and heightens up the
Sense of absolutely urgency.
Right. It just blows my mind that these people, I mean, granted, I was going to say they were pretty good at covering up, but they fucking really weren't. They really weren't. The only thing that they had in their back pocket
was Brian Albert and his...
Was Brian Albert, was Proctor.
And Higgins.
I hate to say this, but the fucking judicial system, too. They were all in cahoots with each other, and poor Miss Reed has just got fucked, really.
So, this investigation begins. The Canton Police Department were the first on the scene shortly after 6 a.m. At the time, there was no evidence that Mr. O'Keefe had been hit by a vehicle. In fact, the evidence suggested just the opposite. His body did not show signs of trauma commonly associated with being struck by a car. There were no bone fractures or trauma to his lower body, his torso, or any other part of his body as investigators would expect from a vehicle strike. Rather, Mr. O'Keefe's injuries were consistent with being physically assaulted to the face and head and attacked by a dog. For good reason, the ranking Canton Police Department officer on the scene, Sergeant Michael Lank, opined a telephone call captured on a dash cam that Mr. O'Keefe looked like he had been in a fight.
Moreover, the initial search conducted by Canton police officers revealed that there was no vehicle debris on the lawn at 34 Fairview, let alone any debris at or near Mr. O'Keefe's body. Not a single piece of taillight material was discovered on the lawn that morning or in the roadway, notwithstanding multiple searches and the use of a leaf blower to remove snow.
Tellingly, despite the commotion outside, including more than a dozen first responders, three police cruisers, two ambulances, a ladder fire engine, all with their emergency lights flashing, and at least two civilian vehicles, plus Miss Reed's screams upon finding Mr. O'Keefe's body, no one from the Alberts' house, including police officer Brian Albert, ever went outside to see what was happening, let alone help. They wanted to avoid scrutiny from the police investigators.
That was another thing that blew my mind about them looking for evidence. Like, you see crime scene techs, crime CSI and everything. They're meticulously looking around
for everything. For evidence,
and you want to bring a fucking 120-mile-an-hour wind-blowing fucking leaf blower. Woo! You know what I mean? Blowing shit around. If there's little bitty pieces of a taillight, it's going to blow it 30 fucking foot away. It seems like they were trying to blow evidence away or trying to...
But there wasn't no evidence.
I know
there
wasn't any, and obviously they knew that. But can you imagine? I'm looking for microscopic evidence, and then you're fucking taking something that's blowing 80 to 100 miles an hour, blowing shit every fucking where. It's disgusting, man. Sergeant Lank was a longtime friend of the Alberts and the first law enforcement officer to enter the house. He spoke to the Alberts and the McCabes. Pursuant to their plan, the Alberts and the McCabes told Sergeant Lank that Mr. O'Keefe had never entered the Alberts' house the night before. The Alberts and McCabes' statements were false. Mr. O'Keefe arrived at and entered the house or garage where he was assaulted, attacked by the Alberts' dog, and suffered the fatal injury to the back of his head. Despite Mr. O'Keefe's injuries being wholly inconsistent with the story the house defendants were now telling him, neither Sergeant Lank nor any other member of the Canton Police Department searched the house to determine whether the occupants or anyone else were involved in Mr. O'Keefe's death. nor did they request to search the occupants' cell phones, observe their bodies for evidence of a fight, or even secure the scene where Mr. O'Keefe's body was found. They failed to do so because of bias born of friendship and loyalty in favor of the Alberts and McCabes.
After Sergeant Lank returned to the CPD 3 hours after the discovery of Mr. O'Keefe's body and more than 2 hours after being interviewed at the Alberts home that morning, Miss McCabe called Sergeant Lank to report that she recalled additional information. As part of the plan to implicate Miss Reed and remove suspicion from the house defendants, she falsely told Sergeant Lank that Miss Reed told her twice that morning, "I hope I didn't hit him." More than a year later, at a separate proceeding, Miss McCabe changed her story on this topic yet again. In furtherance of the house defendant's plan, Miss McCabe then falsely reported that Miss Reed outright confessed to hitting Mr. O'Keefe right after she first found him in the snow.
Now, in this part of the lawsuit, it explains how Detective Proctor, Trooper Proctor, leads MSP investigation despite the conflicts of interest. Michael Proctor was assigned as the case officer and had primary responsibility for the MSP investigation of Mr. O'Keefe's death. Sergeant Yuri Bukanik was Proctor's direct supervisor. Lieutenant Brian Tully was the supervisory officer at the Norfolk County State Police Detective Unit and thus supervised both Bukanik and Proctor. In their roles, Bukanik and Tully both knew at all times exactly the extent of Proctor's misconduct in the investigation Mr. O'Keefe's death as described below.
From the beginning, Proctor should have never been assigned as an investigating officer, let alone the lead investigator. He grew up and resides in Canton, is good friends with one of the Alberts, and had known the family for years. Proctor and Julie Albert, Brian Albert's sister-in-law, had each other's personal cell phone numbers. In fact, just days before Mr. O'Keefe's death, Proctor communicated with Julie Albert about babysitting Proctor's minor child. Proctor's sister, Courtney, was also a close friend of Julie, her best friend to be exact. In fact, Proctor's own mother referred to the Alberts as the Proctor's second family. The existence of these relationships was intentionally suppressed by Proctor and other members of the Massachusetts State Police, including Bukanik and Tully, in an effort to ensure that the house defendants were protected and that Miss Reed's right to a fair investigation and trial were definitely undermined.
Yeah, that was also another part that really spun my fucking head about this. I mean, this Proctor didn't have any relationship with Mr. O'Keefe whatsoever. I mean,
no.
They may have knew who each other was. I don't even know if that's a fact or not. I don't believe has ever surfaced. But for him and all the suspects and defendants to have such a close relationship, grew up together, live in the same town, for him to be the lead investigator.
And conflict of interest.
And after they knew that he was talking all this fucking shit about Karen Reed on text messages, it's fucking disgusting, really.
He has no integrity at all.
No integrity, and you're going to be like, oh, yeah, here, you can lead this investigation of the murder of this Boston police officer. I mean, that's fucking red flag number 35,000.
And so much has come out about Michael Proctor and his text messages, not only in this investigation, but so many others in Massachusetts. It's like a domino effect.
I'm glad all this shit came out, because it's fucking cops like that to be doing fucking people dirty AF on the side of the road. You know what I mean?
And you can only imagine, like, the good cops, the stand-up cops, how just this infuriates them and pisses them off.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, in the end, it gives all of them a bad name.
It does.
Just,
I don't look at the Massachusetts State Police the same after this motherfucker.
No, and it makes it hard to look at all police officers the same because you always think in the back of your head, do these motherfuckers know each other or what?
This dude's an MSP. Watch your back. If I was a woman driving in the middle of the night, I'd be like, what kind of breathalyzer he going to pull out and have me blow? You know what I mean? Fucking dickhead. Anyway. We got so much more to go on this lawsuit, man. I hope you guys are really interested in it because me and Julie's kind of vested in this case. We've been checking it out since the gate. If you want to learn more about how this case transpired, go back to our John O'Keefe Secrets in the Snow episodes, man, and fucking check it out. You also, we're going to release some of our daily show, The Daily Detour. We're going to throw y'all a couple free episodes, and it is... they're normally going to be released on Patreon for our $5 marker Patreon guys. And if you're interested in that shit, go to
www.patreon.com/69South.
Until then, if you want to support us, help us keep the lights and the heat on in the studio. And until then, we wish you a good day, a good evening, whatever.
When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork, refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer, or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in, all with the style you want. And reliability you can count on, so you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances. So much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.